We have two questions from audience members, one of which is a customer of Rainmaker. But here's the problem, Brian. I didn't get permission necessarily from these folks, these fine folks, so I'm not going to name them. But their questions are nonetheless valid. Is that all right with you?
I think that's a smart move.
All right. So John Doe asks, he says he's interested in building an audience with paid traffic, but it's, you know, quite difficult to engage in content marketing and these ideas of content strategy without an audience. What do you think about building an audience versus selling a product with paid traffic?
Well, that's an easy answer because the hardest of core, grizzled pay-per-click veterans who make their money on return on investment between paid and selling stuff will tell you that you will sell more stuff if you get someone to opt into a content stream instead of hitting them with the sales page from the click. So you can't avoid content strategy because it pretty much works better in every context. All you're really doing is talking about distribution when you pay instead of, you know, some other kind of organic method that takes longer, yes. So, you know, and we did talk about this in the context of the new Rainmaker training course, which is paid media as your distribution catalyst. And we have more options than ever with social advertising, getting that spark going by paying Twitter or Facebook to reach enough people and then having it kick in organically at that point. So the key is, if your content is crap, you're still going to throw your money away. It still has to be dead on with the audience. But I can tell you right now, compared to how I started Copyblogger as a complete unknown, you know, did not allow myself any budget whatsoever. It was just content and good old begging. Hi, would you like to look at my content? I think it would be beneficial to your audience. Luckily, some very nice people like Darren Rouse and Liz Strauss and, you know, some other people who weren't so nice but thought they were being big shots by disagreeing with me and didn't realize their audience was quite interested in what I had to say, right? But it was still a lonely 3 months there at the beginning. I started a project now. You know, and let's say it's a completely on a different topic. So I would not presume that my current audience would necessarily be interested in it. I would get the word out with creating great content with a strategy aimed at the type of person I was trying to reach. And then I would just invest that cash. So I don't, you know, not that I have the time to go begging for exposure anymore, you know. But I think a lot of people would pay to build an audience if they knew they could get a return on it. And so the process of content development and strategy toward that audience is still the same, because you are ultimately, regardless of the means, either you spend your time or you spend your money getting the word out, getting distribution, getting that catalyst, it's still the same process. So by all means, use money to make it happen. But just realize that the process is the same as far as the content you develop and the strategy behind it.
For those who may not be totally clear on the big idea of what we're talking about here, you just said it, but it's the idea of creating really good, useful, entertaining, whatever is relevant to your goals and your business content, and sending paid traffic of various forms to that content, you know, looking for the opt-in, as opposed to sending paid traffic to a product page or a landing page with, you know, selling.
I mean, there are
specific
times that that can work, but that's usually commodity, you know, battling it out on price. It's a rough game, man. And Google makes it worse because they're always going to up the price per click. That's the problem of depending on Google really for anything.
And it's short term, right? I mean, people, obviously,
well, yeah,
you want to sell
anytime
something.
Anytime you advertise in the traditional sense, and that includes Google, you are buying access to an audience instead of building your own audience. You build your own audience, you still get to keep them as long as you're serving their interest. You borrow constantly, you're always going back and paying someone else. That's a horrible thing to do.
All right, Jane Doe asks, how do you determine what should be used as public attraction content versus what is used for member content? And this is in the context of building a paid membership site.
Yeah, that's an eternal question. And there are so many methodologies. And a lot of the times, you know, you and I have talked about this before, Robert. Once you put in the time and the research to understand the audience you're going after, you kind of just get a feel for it. I know that's the squishiest answer ever. But if you really know them, intuition, I believe, is just informed subconscious knowledge. You know the answer's in there, and then it bubbles up to you. Okay, but that's totally not a satisfying answer to anyone. The very best thing you can do for really great concrete answers is to go to Chris Garrett's post on Copyblogger about this exact topic. It's literally titled What to Give Away and What to Sell. Yeah. And Robert will have that in the show notes. And I would go through that. It's very comprehensive. It was a home run of a post for Chris because so many people do have that very question. We could also look to Sonia Simone's favorite analogy, which is actually comes from Sean D'Souza, but it's almost become attributed to Sonia because it's so hilarious that a hippie feminist from Berkeley loves this analogy. And I always tell people it's Sonia's favorite before someone yells at me for being sexist or something. But it's actually Sean D'Souza's concept that Sonia adopted called the bikini concept. And that's very simple, which is you can show people 95% for free, but they're still going to pay for the last 5%. So, yes, that's somewhat crude, but you get the idea immediately. And I think it really breaks down, and this is covered in Chris's post much more extensively. But, you know, it's about the why and the what for free, as long as it's hitting on the problem or desire that's already out there. And again, that's just good old-fashioned research, understanding who you're trying to reach. But that's the stuff you give away for free. And you can actually talk in general about the solution, about the how. You know, going back to, you can tell people quite a bit of what the solution is, and they're still always going to want a little bit more, a little more in depth, a little bit more step by step. And this is where, you know, the whole bikini concept, as cute as it is, really goes back to one of our favorite guys, Eugene Schwartz, who was a copywriter who also was an entrepreneur. And he wrote and published, I don't know if he published his own books. I don't remember. Yeah, I think he did. But they were, you know, do-it-yourself, self-help type books on various topics. And his marketing would give away the best part of the book, like the meat of the solution. And yet he sold boatloads because people want the whole context. They want the whole solution. They want, you know, they want the whole package. And that's why I think people sweat this question maybe more than they should, and yet I totally understand where it comes from. So take a look at Chris's post, but keep in mind that sometimes you could give away everything in text, and yet you will sell boatloads of a different format, such as video. Some of the savviest internet marketing people have done effectively that. They pretty much give it all away during the launch, and yet everyone still buys for the format or the context that they prefer.
All right, so we're going to keep going with these questions, Brian, in upcoming episodes of this show, Rainmaker FM. And if you have questions about media content strategy, what we want to ask you to do, with all respect and politeness, is to please drop them into the comments section of this episode's post. And we'll keep answering these in the weeks to come. As many as we can get to. We're going to do about two to an episode, but go to rainmaker.fm and you'll see the stream of posts for this podcast there. Drop it into, at some point it won't matter which one because we'll keep going through those. But drop your question.
Yeah, just whatever one's at the top. Drop it in there.
Speaking of questions, this episode of Rainmaker FM is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform. There's a lot of questions, a lot of frustrations floating around out there that really just kind of boil down to one thing, and that is, how do I quit screwing around with building my website and focus on building my business? A lot of people are sick of worrying about software updates, database crashes, whether certain plugins are compatible with certain versions of a CMS. And that's not even to mention the massive cost and hassle of building and maintaining a custom membership site, which we're going to talk more about later in coming episodes. But then there's the management of multiple services and software and trying to cobble them all together into something that looks and functions remotely like you want it to. If any of these frustrations sound familiar to you, I want you to try something just right now. Head over to rainmakerplatform.com. Click around over there. Go ahead and sign up for the free 14-day trial of the Rainmaker platform. Stop horsing around with your website. Start building your business. Rainmakerplatform.com. So D-commerce. I've heard of e-commerce, but what is D-commerce, Brian?
Well, D-commerce, you know, it makes sense in contrast to e-commerce. I'm not sure I'm totally sold on that. You like it a little bit better than I do, at least.
I like that it breaks out. You know, we all know what e-commerce is or have an idea of what it is, but this kind of clarifies two different versions between e-commerce and d-commerce.
Right. So it's short for digital commerce. And what we're talking about here, in effect, in the broadest sense, compared to e-commerce, which is the online selling and fulfillment, right? The purchase and fulfillment of physical goods using the internet. That's e-commerce. And digital commerce, as it makes sense, would be the sale and fulfillment of digital products and services online. So to me, that would include the entire downloadable software industry, the entire, you know, WordPress theme industry, anything that can be delivered digitally online. There's no mailing involved. It all happens at the point of sale, followed with a download. Now, of course, Rainmaker, one of its strengths, the platform, is anything digital commerce. Right out of the box, you can sell anything that can be digitally delivered, obviously. Digital commerce, as it's being used in the broader sense online, seems to tend to exclude other forms of digital products and services and really just focus on content, right? So we're talking about kind of going to the question from earlier, you know, I want to sell content. I know I have to give away some to attract people, which is which. So digital commerce is the content that you actually sell. But, and this goes way back with us from both a practice and a philosophical standpoint, that you're not really just selling content, even when that's the business you're in. Digital commerce is really about creating access to a beneficial experience. Now, that experience includes information that's in digital format, obviously, but it really comes down to, why would someone pay you for your information as opposed to maybe, you know, doing hours and hours of Googling, trying to piece it together themselves? So it really has to be something that is a well-defined, beneficial experience. And it's got to be being part of something, belonging to something. And that's really kind of the crux of a membership site, right? It's I belong and other people don't. Sounds kind of primitive, but psychologically very strong.
So what I get the definition of d-commerce as selling digital content. I like that. Like we said, it clarifies it. But let's, what is an example? What is the beneficial experience of, say, the authority membership site?
Well, I mean, that one's easy because a big aspect of that is the community and, you know, the forums and the interaction, not just with us.
Not just the downloads.
Not, well, certainly not. I mean, there's tons and tons of information in there. And I think that's why people buy authority. But once they're in there, it's been quite clear to us that they stay for the community. They stay for the interaction with their peers and with us. And it's funny how their peers become even more important than us over time.
Yeah. And one more thing, you've brought this up before many times, but, you know, in the context of our product Studio Press and the WordPress themes and the framework, Genesis framework build over there and sell over there, the beneficial experience there that you've talked about many times. Yes, the thing itself is good, has to be good. But really, in that case, it's more about the support that you're buying.
Yeah. You know, in the world of WordPress with GPL software, you are selling support. I guess if you just want the thing, you can go find it, or you could just use a free theme, right?
Yeah, right. But that's what I'm getting at.
Not really what people are buying. They want, if they don't even use the support because we've done a good enough job with our instructions and with our product design so that it's that easy, they still want to know it's there, right? So a lot of people don't understand. A lot of, you know, there are some very sophisticated and nihilistic people online who don't understand how normal people think. You know, most people don't use these Tor networks or whatever to download stuff because...
What's a Tor network, Brian?
Well, you know, peer-to-peer, all that stuff that Tony tries to get you to use.
Right.
But, you know, I'm like, no, I'd rather just pay for it. I don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah.
Exactly. In addition to wanting to support the creator, which is huge, you know, so.
Yeah. All right. So you launched from Copyblogger in 2007, a product that was essentially, the whole thing is about what's now known as digital commerce. What has changed in that since 2007?
Yeah, it is amazing. I'm not surprised by what's changed, but it's still just amazing to reflect back that when we launched our first premium content training program, how many, you know, the mentality at the time was that no one will ever pay for content again. And it just shows you, you know, you get these crazy thought leaders, you know, with these opinions, and people, they have authority and people follow them, and it doesn't matter that they're completely wrong until someone else says, hey, maybe this person or these people don't have perspective that predates them starting a Twitter account, and that's dangerous, right? So in 2007, with the original Teaching Sales report, I spent a great deal of time making the case that, in fact, people will pay for content. People do pay for content. It's becoming more of a thing, not less. And Google and the internet are actually contributing to the fact that people will always pay for content, always. So fast forward, I mean, not even to 2014, but, you know, 2009, 2010. And it became quite apparent that, you know, the initial idea that people wouldn't pay for content again was completely wrong. I mean, now we've got, you know, the rise of ebooks. We've got the rise of the app stores. We've got training programs and membership sites across the spectrum. And the biggest of all, e-learning, which is just a ridiculously billion-dollar industry, right? I mean, one would say, I think that people are paying for more content than ever. And as, you know, lifelong learning becomes the norm, I think you'll see people won't go to college at some point in the nearer future than a lot of people would like to think, because you're effectively spending 4 years learning outdated information and the world is passing you by. I know that sounds crazy, but there's a lot of people who see it that way, to where my kids, I've got a daughter who's 12 and a boy who's 9. I think they'll probably go to college if they want to, but only because I can afford it and I don't, you know, and that's great. I want them to do what they want to do. But if it were otherwise, I don't think I'd advise them to go to college.
Yeah, unless you're going to be obviously a brain surgeon or you want to build bridges or buildings.
Yeah, there are certain professions where you have to do it, right?
But yeah,
I'm going to try to make them into entrepreneurs, so.
Well, the joke, too, has been, you know, the quote-unquote liberal arts education. What did it get me?
My liberal arts education was the greatest thing ever, including my legal education, you know, technically, which I don't use, but it changed the way I think, and that the way you think is the thing. But you could have taught me how to think critically and otherwise with a great e-learning program. In fact, with gamification, it probably would have been more effective.
Yeah. What about kind of the, you mentioned the rise of e-learning platforms and programs. You know, you look around at things like Udemy and Skillshare. Are there?
Yeah, can you imagine? I mean, I had to make the case in 2007 that you could actually sell content. And then now we've got things like Skillshare. And I mean, it's everywhere. Treehouse, Lynda.com, all of these. I just look back at it as ridiculous, but you really have to understand that's how people thought at the time. So now look at today. What are these things that certain pundits are telling you, right? You know, what was a few years ago, Robert? You don't need a website. Facebook, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
How bad does that look right now? And we were there saying, don't do that. Don't do that. Digital sharecropping. Bad, bad, bad. Cory Doctorow has a new book out called Information Doesn't Want to Be Free. He's effectively arguing that the big platforms, Apple, Google, Amazon, whatever, they've effectively perverted copyright law to extend to the point where the platform is controlling your sense of choice in a way that we would never accept from someone else. And I'm like, yes. Again, this goes back to what have we been saying? Why is it called the Rainmaker platform? Because you have to have your own platform. And these are the tools that allow you to build it. Robert, I know you almost lost your mind so much against people whose marketing strategy was, just put it in the App Store.
Right.
You used to rant and rave about that. I'm like, Robert, you can't fix the whole world, you know?
Listen, when people are praying to the wrong gods, like the gods of Apple, it gets me.
Yeah, Apple's great for buying stuff from, but I don't want them to sell stuff for me, you know?
Well, in the same light, back to content, just I think yesterday, Gregory Chiotti tweeted that, you know, Fast Company's Facebook page has 500,000 followers, 500,000 followers. But go look at that Facebook page. Go look at many of these Facebook pages and see the comments, the number of comments, the number of shares versus the number of followers.
Facebook just throttled the whole thing. And right. They do that, so you'll pay them to reach the audience you built.
But here's the problem, Brian. People like Facebook, the Apple store, the App Store, these kinds of opportunities, they seem to be, I don't think people would say a shortcut, but they seem to be like, okay, this is not only is this is where everybody is a common refrain, but it's so much easier than, you know, building a website out and building my own audience.
It's
and building
easier
an email
to be
list.
Completely invisible is what it is.
That's right.
Right. You know, we always look at the outliers. You know, everything from the startup game, you look at Twitter and Instagram and don't realize that not only were those one in a million flukes, but the people who started them were well connected and they were rich already. And they had, you know, the mobile phone numbers of venture capitalists hey, this seems to be working. I can't believe it. Can you give us some money? Yes.
Yeah.
You think that's a normal experience? But here's the other thing that I'm seeing very different from 2007. You know, I mean, there were a lot of people who wanted to build a digital commerce business, as we now call it. But I don't think a lot of them were qualified to do it. You know, in any sense of entrepreneurial ambition, a lot of people just won't do it, you know, and sometimes it's life that intervenes. Sometimes it's a confidence issue. Sometimes it's a skill set issue, you know, on and on and on. But remember, in 2007, content marketing was not even an accepted term, much less a billion-dollar industry, right? So what I'm seeing, in contrast, now, lots of very highly qualified people. They've been trained. They've been doing content marketing. They've been doing content creation. A lot of these people have backgrounds in traditional advertising, copywriting, journalism, all of these talent pool. And so I'll talk to people. I've been speaking the last couple of weeks more than I usually do, and I'm meeting people. And so they're like, I'm a content creator, I'm a content strategist, I'm a copywriter. And so I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, we're coming out with this reseller program for Rainmaker, where you're able to deliver this, you know, sophisticated solution without development. And of course, you're making your money providing content services, et cetera, et cetera. And they're like, yes, I am definitely interested in that. But I also want to start my own online training, my own membership site. You know, they have the same dreams that people like you and I had, and they're qualified to do it. So the interesting thing I think you're seeing is these hybrid business models where someone's like, yeah, I'm going to take clients because there is a ton of people who know they need content and they're not qualified to do it themselves, and they're going to have to pay someone like me. Yes, sign me up. But at the same time, they are building something that is either a way to attract better quality of clients, which is a, you know, one of our teaching sales business models effectively, and or they want the membership, training, et cetera, to stand on its own and become the business over time. And I think it's amazing, you know, relatively compared to 2007, it took us forever to get Rainmaker out, which is what people were asking us for. Please give us the tools, you know, that's easy to use. It took a long time to get out. And yet I keep seeing that the timing, both from the content marketing industry and the digital commerce industry, is perfect because there are finally enough people who can really do this. It's not a pipe dream for them. They have the skills. All they need is guidance. And of course, we are more than happy to provide that.
You have quoted, the right information in the right place just changes your life. Why does that quote matter so much?
So that is part of this infamous saying by a guy named Stuart Brand, who said it in 1984, pre-internet. But he was one of the founders of The Well and other electronic communities before, you know, the web. And he's the guy who said information wants to be free. And that's what's been quoted out of context over and over and over again. But what he really said first was information wants to be expensive, because the right information in the right place just changes your life. And then he said, on the other hand, information wants to be free, and he's talking about electronic distribution, right? So how is it that Copyblogger Media was able to build everything that it has without venture capital and without advertising? It's content with social distribution, right? In that context, free information makes a whole lot of sense because it brings people back to us and we're able to sell what we actually sell. So that's where the saying comes from. But, you know, people are missing 2/3 of the quote when they say information wants to be free. And again, I referenced Cory Doctorow's new book, which says information does not want to be free. And I think that shows you, you know, what was me making a niche argument in 2007 is not only mainstream now, but it's dire, you know. creators need to make money from what they create. And this particular model of whether you want to call it online education, e-learning, you know, training or more less intense membership sites, all of this is more viable than ever. So free information with social distribution is the greatest marketing thing ever if you focus on the audience. Information wants to be expensive because, you know, I think you're the type and I'm the type and a lot of people are the type that do enjoy acquiring knowledge for its own sake. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But when it comes to paying for it, we usually want some benefit out of it, right? Whether it just be, you know, more cohesive, more convenient, more efficient. But
from
also
a particular source. Yeah.
Yeah. A particular source is the big one. Authority. You know, who do we trust?
Yep.
Benefits of knowledge as opposed to information. That's why people pay and will always pay.
So I want you to elaborate on something you've said several times that I've heard you about teaching sales, that that the teaching sales program represents the intersection of direct marketing and instruction design. What do you mean by that?
So instructional design is basically, especially when teaching adult learners, although it should apply to every learner, and I think that's the trend, you know, you're designing for engagement, retention, comprehension, all of this stuff. And the way you do that is by focusing on the benefits of knowledge. Now, this has gone back. This was once cutting edge instructional design thought, learning psychology, you know, back in 2001, 2002, when I really was just fascinated with this stuff with my background in general psychology and sociology. It was just a natural topic to me. At that same time, of course, I was teaching myself copywriting and, you know, direct marketing, direct response, all of this stuff. And so I, you know, it's kind of like you're geeking out on two unrelated things and you realize they are completely congruent. And I remember reading an e-learning textbook, actually. Yes, I am a dork. I read textbooks.
Wow.
But and it was basically advocating copywriting techniques for instructional design for e-learning, because why does copywriting work in a commerce context? It's engaging and it focuses on benefits. Well, it turns out if you want someone to learn something, you've got to do the same thing. So features versus benefits, copywriting 101. People don't want a drill, they want a hole, right? Or really, they want to hang a piece of art in their home. Or really, they want their neighbors to perceive them in a certain way based on the art hanging on the wall that required a drill, right? You know, we can do this exercise to ultimate benefits all day long. But the simplest expression is, I don't really want a drill. What I need is a hole in the wall. Okay. So same thing, knowledge just for its own sake versus the benefits of knowledge. Going back to what we were talking about, you know, college, university, degree, all that kind of stuff. We can say, and I could say again, that I would send my kids to college for the experience, although, you know, a lot of the college experience is not all that healthy if they follow in their old man's footsteps, which we may not want, but, you know, the liberal arts education, the learning experience, you know, I was exposed to things that I might not have been exposed to otherwise. But is that really historically why we send our kids to college or why kids want to go to college? No,
absolutely not.
You know, they want that degree so that they can get a job or get into a certain profession, which is that the end benefit? No, they want money. They want prestige. They want a good life. They want a family, all of that stuff. Those are the real benefits. Same exact thing. So starting point number one, realize that you aren't selling information. You're selling access to benefits, an outcome that matters. And that's a big part of what we tried to teach in Teaching Sales was these two things, marketing and, you know, the creation of content, are not mutually exclusive. One's not a necessary evil. They are completely intertwined when you realize that they're all about the expression and delivery of benefits.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to another episode of Rainmaker FM. You can find more of these episodes at rainmaker.fm, and please do two things. Number one, please leave a question for the Q&A section of this podcast in the comments section of any one of those posts. Number two, if you like what's going on here, leave a comment or rating in iTunes. We much appreciate it. This episode, like all of the episodes of Rainmaker FM, are brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform. Check that out at rainmakerplatform.com. Mr. Clark, I'm going to see you next week, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks, everybody.